This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Our focus this afternoon in the Championship will be talking about Cardiff, Charlton, Swansea and Bristol City over the next hour as we build up to the return of the Championship after this international break. We'll also be talking about some of the comments that Eddie Nketiah has made about his position at Leeds, how he feels he should be starting more games. We'll also be reacting to a game that he was involved in last night as England under-21s thrashed the Austrian under-21s by 5-1. We'll also be talking a little bit about the surprise packages of the season, who is doing much better than we thought and who has been the biggest disappointment of the season up until this point. Remember, you can get in contact with us this afternoon. Call us on 0208 7020 558. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about in the next hour. As I mentioned, if you want to share your views on how your Championship club has started this season, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Continue getting your WhatsApps in as well. We were talking about our Premier League team of the season so far, both including big six sides and also excluding them. Also, Championship, who has been the real surprise packages individually, who's been outstanding at the start of the season, who also has perhaps been a little bit of a letdown at the start of this season. We're going to start off by talking about some comments that Eddie Nketiah has made. Now, he scored a hat-trick for the England under-21s last night that we'll talk about in a little bit more detail in just the next few minutes. But it was more to do with his comments about his current club situation. So, obviously, he's on loan at Leeds United from Arsenal. And he admitted last night he is frustrated by his role as a Leeds substitute. He scored 4 for the England under-21s during this international break. 3 last night against the Austrian under-21s and also 1 against Slovenia under-21s. But he's yet to start a Championship match for Marcelo Bielsa's side this season. He has scored 4 in 9 matches across all competitions, but is struggling to gain a place in Leeds' side during Championship games and starting. These are some of the comments that he has made. I'm really just trying to do as much as I can. Obviously, I will never be happy with being on the bench. I want to play. I pride myself on being in the team. I think I am good enough to be in the team. All I can do is put in the performances that I do. When I come on to try and contribute, and I think with the chances I've had, I have done really well. In the 2 games I've started, I've scored. I always try and help the team when I come on. I feel like going away with England is always a great opportunity for me to continue to put a case forward and show myself. He's played 329 minutes so far for Leeds. Not a huge amount, and has scored 4. He's played 297 minutes for the England under-21s and has scored 6. Now, we talked a little bit to James Benj in the last hour, who was talking about how Arsenal will be wanting to see more of Eddie Nketiah play at Leeds this season. We've got a caller in to talk a little bit about Eddie Nketiah, whether he should be getting a few more starts at Leeds. I'm delighted to say that Mitchell, the Leeds United season ticket holder, has called in on 0208 7020 558 this afternoon. Thanks very much for calling in, Mitchell. What are your views on Nketiah's comments? Should he be getting more starts at Leeds?
I think the comments speak for themselves, really. He should definitely be getting started. I've been saying this for months on end now. I don't know what more the lad has to do. I genuinely feel really sorry for him. You know, if I don't see him in the team on Saturday, against Birmingham, and Patrick starts, then I think really Bielsa's taken the mickey out of us, really. He's doing everything right, I'm hearing, in training, because I know a couple of coaches at Leeds that give information to me on how the players are actually doing. And he's one of the best trainers there, I've been told. We see in the games when he comes on how much of an impact he makes. His pace, his attacking mindset, you know, that getting in that 6-yard box. Where I've seen a lot of strikers over the years, you know, like Billy Sharp, Dwight Gayle, that goal poachers that like to get in and around the six-yard box, where you want every striker that's got that instinctive finish to get in and around there. And I don't feel like we get that from Patrick, you know. Now, I'm not knocking the lad. I don't want to be critical. But at this stage of the season, we should be 8 points better off. And because of Bamford missing so many chances, I think if we had Nketiah there, he would have bailed us out massively. You know, you can see he's going to be a 20-goal striker. Is it a concern? Yes, definitely. I am very worried because I do wonder what Bielsa thinks and what goes through his mind, because we've brought him in from Arsenal so he can get games, so it works out for both parties. Arsenal get a man back in the summer that's going to have played plenty of minutes and, you know, got plenty of goals, and we hopefully get promotion. But for me, I feel like he's not, you know, I like to see a manager relying on a striker, but he doesn't give him enough authority, I don't think. And I think Patrick's had his chance now. You know, he's played plenty of minutes, and the amount of chances that he misses each week is beyond ridiculous. You know, I'm hoping that he gives him a start this weekend.
I spoke to the former Leeds defender last week, Tony Dorigo, and he said in his blog that he didn't really understand why certain sections of the Leeds fans were getting on Patrick Bamford's back, saying that it wasn't helpful, it doesn't help anyone by getting on his back. He has scored 4 goals this season, so is there an argument for Marcelo Bielsa to say that he is scoring goals, he is producing the numbers, or is there that risk that Arsenal might turn around and say he's not playing enough and there will be plenty of other championship sides that would be queuing up to sign Nketiah?
Of course there will be. You know, I've got to say, as much as I love Tony Dorigo, he's not, I don't agree with them comments. You know, Patrick's not done enough. We've bought him. We've got to look what's on the paper now. You know, we've paid $7 million for a striker. You know, putting in a good shift on $35,000 a week that I'm hearing. Is that enough, really? You know, you've got to start. I don't want to be critical, because there's not one person in the country that supports Leeds United as much as me that doesn't want him to do well. I would love to see Bamford score 30 goals a season, but he's not that sort of player. His record shows he's not had that consistency over the years. You know, at Middlesbrough, I've got a Middlesbrough fan that I speak to a lot. He says he's not a striker. And, you know, I'm seeing this a lot more often now, and I don't think he is. I think his general play is very good. His touches are lovely. But when it comes to that goal, that is his job. He's a striker at the end of the day. And you know, you want to be seeing them scoring plenty of goals. 4 goals is great if you're not creating that many chances. But you have to look. I think what Tony's got to have a look at is the amount of chances he misses to scoring them. Now, I can tell you now, the way we're going at the minute, we're going to only score 62 goals at the end of the season if we carry on in this way. And Bamford's going to have a lot to answer for. But at the same time, if he's not in form, you can't just blame Patrick. You've got to blame the manager, because he should be giving Eddie a go when he's coming off the bench and scoring in the last 10 minutes. He's bailed us out against Brentford. He's bailed us out against Barnsley, sorry, as well. So what more does that lad need to do to be given that first team chance of actually starting a game? You know, when is he going to start relying on Eddie rather than Patrick? Because he's had more than enough chances. Now, I'm all for having loyalty with players, but he's getting beyond a joke now with how much loyalty he's sticking with Bamford. And I think Bielsa's looking like he could end up running out of ideas. We're paying him $7 million a year now. We're chucking a lot of money at it, and I'm not sure that it's going to pay off.
Thank you very much for your call this afternoon, Mitchell. That was Mitchell, the Leeds United season ticket holder, calling in on 0208 7020 558. You can call in on that number or WhatsApp us on that number. What's your view? Should Eddie Nketiah be starting more games for Leeds? Hasn't started a league game for them this season. Scored 4 goals. Has scored 6 goals for the England under-21s this season so far in not a lot of minutes. So does he deserve that start? Mitchell was very strong in his opinion. It would be a joke if Nketiah doesn't start on the weekend. He should be starting ahead of Bamford, who in his view is wasting a lot of opportunities. I'm sure Arsenal will be very keen to see Nketiah start more games at Leeds. That's the whole point of sending them down into the Championship on loan, is to give them good amount of game time. Obviously, Nketiah scored a hat-trick in England's England under-21s win last night. They beat Austria under 21s by 5-1. Callum Hudson-Odoi scored twice. One of the goals was absolutely fantastic. Dribble from just outside his penalty area on the counter-attack. And then curled it into the top corner from just outside Austria's penalty area. And Nketiah could have scored four, actually missed a penalty late on. But you look through that England team that started last night. Aaron Ramsdale is currently starting for Bournemouth. Lloyd Kelly is really good, a young player that Bournemouth signed from Bristol City over the summer that I rate really, really highly. Max Ahrens, as we were talking about with Chris Reeve in the last hour, starting for Norwich. Chris believes that Ahrens is extremely close to the full England setup. England are blessed with a lot of very good right-backs. Joe Willock, obviously of Arsenal. Phil Foden, yet again, was outstanding. The class that young lad has is just phenomenal. I mean, he's not worth £450 million, Pep Guardiola, but he is still quite a phenomenal player. And I know it's easier said than done, us just being sat here and saying, oh, Phil Foden should be starting for Manchester City because we're not the City manager. But quite clearly, this lad should be playing more than 10 minutes of Premier League football through the first 8 games. That's ridiculous. Suggests that he's only good enough for that. Yes, City have an abundance of talent, but realistically, he should be playing more than 10 minutes. And he showed that class. He's too good for the under-21s level now. He should be playing in the full England setup. Maybe if he was playing more regularly for City, he would be. Dwight McNeil was a man we mentioned towards the end of the last hour with Joe Redman from the Turfcast podcast. Has had a couple of really good years as a young talent emerging through. He was let go by Manchester United as an academy lad because he couldn't cross the ball particularly well. Well, I think he certainly improved in that discipline. Eddie Nketiah, as we've been talking about, and Callum Hudson-Odoi, who, if he hadn't been injured, he'd have been involved in the full England setup. And again, a bit like Phil Foden, showing he's too good for this level nowadays. On the bench, that's a Rian Brewster, who won the penalty late on that Nketiah missed, and also Ollie Skip of Tottenham were also on the bench. So much talent in that England under 21 side that battered the Austrians last night. In terms of surprise packages, Nottingham Forest have definitely been the surprise package of the Championship so far. Currently joint top, they're in second on goal difference behind West Brom, but they have certainly been an impressive team this season. QPR have also been a surprise package. Charlton as well. The biggest disappointment, Stoke are obviously one of those, I think. Someone said the other week, I think Steve Cooper, the Swansea manager, said when they lost to Stoke that they have one of the best squads in the Championship and should be nowhere near where they are at the moment. But Nathan Jones still holds on to that job. Huddersfield have been disappointing, but they've changed their manager. They've gone with Danny Cowley, who's an exciting English manager, and I think they will finish way above the relegation zone. Brentford, a lot was expected of them before the season started, and they're languishing in the bottom half of the table. And Middlesbrough, we spoke to Dominic Shaw of Teesside Live, and he said that Woodgate's under no real pressure, that they'll be patient. But if in a couple of months' time Middlesbrough are still languishing in and around the relegation zone, that patience may wear very, very thin. If you've got any views on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Cardiff.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. And we're going to be talking all things Cardiff now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ben James, writer and founder of View from the Ninian. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ben. It was a 4-2 loss against West Brom last time out. Did that come as a real shock to you that a Neil Warnock side conceded so many goals, or considering the quality of opposition that Cardiff were up against, was it really a surprise that Cardiff didn't get anything from the game?
Yeah, good afternoon. I think it was a bit of a shock that we conceded four. I think there was an air of pessimism going into the game, because I think when you look at West Brom and the players they've got, you know, I mean, Charlie Austin still hasn't hit the ground running, but when he does, you expect him to kind of lead them to promotion almost. I think we're not very good at retaining possession, and a team who like to have the ball like West Brom are always going to punish us if they do get a lot of the ball. But I think there is some kind of cause for optimism to come from the game. We actually had a few shots. I think we equaled them for shots on target. We just didn't put them away. And I think Danny Ward coming off the bench and getting two goals late on shows that we've got a striker in backup who probably deserves to start next time around. So as much as it was a bit of a demoralising defeat, I think there's positives to take from it.
Cardiff are currently sat in 11th place, around 16 points. And the way the Championship is, that all it takes a couple of wins and suddenly Cardiff can find themselves in the playoff spots. But Did you expect a slightly better reaction to being relegated, or do you think there was a bit of a hangover? Considering the manner in which Cardiff got relegated, some felt they were rather unlucky that it wasn't Brighton to go down instead of Cardiff. Do you think that there's a bit of that lingering feeling that's kind of drip-fed into this season?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a perfect storm, really, because I think when we got relegated, like you say, it wasn't really, I don't think it was just with the manner in which we kind of, the results at the end of last season, how Brighton performed, and we just couldn't do enough to kind of pull ourselves clear. I think the summer transfer business, because there was a bit of a changeover, people like Zahor left, we lost Manga, we lost Gunnison. Over the summer, we kind of lost a few players who'd been in the team for quite a long time, including people like Manga and Gunnison. I think there's just been that changing of the guard this summer. Glatzel's come in and hasn't quite hit the ground running. We've had midfielders like Will Volks, who's come from Rotherham, who haven't done anything yet, really. They haven't had the chance to show themselves what they can do. And I think we're still getting used to that transition period, which has led to, I think, you know, we're like you say, we're sat bang in the middle in 11th. We've got 4 wins, 4 draws and 3 losses. It's almost like the perfect mid-table performance so far.
I wanted to get your views on, obviously, Neil Warnock is never shy from making a slightly outlandish comment, and he was very critical before we headed into the international break that Cardiff having to play again on a Friday night, this time at home against Sheffield Wednesday this Friday. He was critical last time of the situation surrounding Leandro Bacuna, how late he came back from international duty. Do you think there's a risk that could distract Cardiff on Friday, that kind of getting so het up about the scheduling that they might be distracted from actually getting on with the business of getting all 3 points?
I don't think it's a distraction. I think it's what Warnock does. I think he's very good at kind of taking the pressure and taking the view away from what's actually going on the pitch. I think, you know, when you look at the managers who do that, he probably invented it in reality. And I think he's always very good at just kind of taking the pressure off the players, making sure that they've only got the football to worry about. And I think those kind of comments in the press are going to lead the way, which means that the scrutiny won't necessarily be on the performance when it comes to it. And I think it does already lay down a kind of excuse before the ball's been kicked, really. I think we've had a few Friday games already this season. I think we had Derby, Fulham, and now this is our third Friday game of the season. I think we're coming into a bit of a clog of fixtures, if you will, and I think he's just kind of getting that in there early so we have that conversation to kind of go on in the background while the players get on playing football. And if the performance is bad, then we've already got a ready-made excuse.
I'm sure one of the big selection dilemmas that Neil Warnock currently has is in goal, because Neil Etheridge, who was the real star for Cardiff last season, has been injured, has come back. Alex Smithies has been in possession of that shirt. In my opinion, I know this might sound a bit harsh on Smithies because he's been in possession of that shirt, but Neil Etheridge was fantastic in the Premier League and could have earned a move back into the Premier League. So I think when he's back fit, he should be back in the team as the number one. Is that too unfair an assessment on Smithies?
I think I wonder if after the international break, I think Etheridge was playing for the Philippines and he was man of the match by all accounts in their game they played in the week. I think now might be the time that we do make that change. I don't think Smithies has done anything wrong. I think he's been very solid. I think he, in the games that he played, he made a couple of good saves. He didn't really have anything, you know, any major mistakes that kind of stand out. But I think Etheridge is ultimately our number one. And I think after the international break, now that Etheridge has got 90 minutes, or maybe even, I think he might play 2 games for the Philippines, if he's got 180 minutes under his belt for his national side, then now might be the perfect time to bring him in, because we'll know that he's got rid of that kind of match fitness rustiness that might have come from being out for a few months. And I think he is ultimately our best goalie. And I think it might reassure the defenders behind him if they're playing with, especially Sean Morrison, who's been playing with Etheridge now for 2 seasons. It might reassure them that the spine is starting to kind of come back into the team.
Just looking ahead then to that game on Friday night, the opponents for Cardiff is Sheffield Wednesday, who have won 3 out of 5 league games since Gary Monk took charge. They're 8th place, just 1 point off the playoff spots. How big a test is this going to be for Cardiff? This is surely not going to be any foregone conclusion for the home side.
No, I think since Monk's come in, they've regalvanised themselves slightly at Sheffield Wednesday, and they've got, you know, I think Steve Fletcher's scoring. They've got a former Cardiff winger in Kadeem Harris, who's had a really good season so far. But I think for us, we've got a kind of fixture pilot that involves three derbies for us, if you will, Millwall, Swansea and Bristol, plus Birmingham in there as well. And I think we really need to get a result on Friday. You're right in saying that it's a not foregone conclusion, but I think Friday's game sets the tone for the next three or four, where there's just huge tests coming up in terms of kind of, you know, those edgy situations where you're playing local rivals and the atmosphere is going to be up. And I think it really sets the tone. If we lose on Friday, we go into Millwall on Tuesday lacking confidence, and then whatever happens at Millwall on Tuesday will feed into Swansea the following Sunday. And I think it's just, we've got a run of these five or six games where we really need to be getting four wins. And I think if we don't start on Friday, I do fear for the next six games.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ben. That was Ben James, writer and founder of View from the Ninian podcast. It is 11th up against 8th on Friday night. 7:45 kickoff. Cardiff up against Sheffield Wednesday. Neil Warnock's been very open with his views on playing yet again for a second time this season, straight off the back of an international break. But maybe he should be concentrating more on the field. But Ben's view was that he probably invented taking pressure off the players, so perhaps not getting too worried about whether the players will be distracted ahead of that game on Friday night. If you want to share your views on your Championship club starts the season or their upcoming fixtures ahead of the weekend as we return from the international break, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Charlton.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon to share your views. Who have been the surprise packages in the Championship this season, both in terms of individuals as well as teams, and who has been the biggest letdown of the season? I'm sure the likes of Stoke City will be right at the top of the disappointment list. We're going to be turning our attention to all things Charlton now. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Martin Atkins from the SE7 podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Martin. A bit of negative news for Charlton this afternoon. It's the news that Lee Bowyer has been given a 3-game touchline ban after admitting charge of improper conduct against Swansea. How detrimental do you think this might be for Charlton that he's got a 3-game touchline ban, or do you think that it won't really have that much of an influence because it's not that many games?
It's hard to say, really, isn't it? Afternoon, Kieran, by the way, sorry. It's hard to say because, you know, really, what can the manager do once he's done his team talk, once he's done his preparation, tactics, he sends him out on the pitch, he's standing on the sideline, I suppose. Not really much he can do, to be honest, so I don't think it's going to be that much of a problem, to be honest.
Interesting to read some of Lee Bowyer's comments over the last few days. He's kind of set his side a safety target of 45 points this season. Considering Charlton already have 18 in 11, is that a little bit too cautious, or do you think it's a case of tempering expectations, not trying to look too far ahead?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Kieran. I think it's tempering expectations of the fans, and I think, you know, when we came into the division, that was our aim, stay in the division, and I think he's just going along with that process, really. I mean, I think probably deep down himself, he probably thinks he's expecting a bit more, but, you know, let's get to the 50 points or 45, as he says, and go from there.
He cites one of the biggest differences between League One and the Championship is the fact that teams are more ruthless. Do you think Charlton kind of being hindered a little bit by the absence of Lyle Taylor, who was fantastic last season, made a good start to life in the Championship this season? Or do you think there are other players, the likes of Macaulay Barn or Conor Gallagher, that are stepping up in his absence?
Well, if you'd asked me this 3 weeks ago, Kieran, I would have said, yeah, I think you're right. You know, we are missing Lyle, but Macaulay's came in the last two games. He's done really well, scored a good goal against Fulham. Obviously, Conor Gallagher's chipping in with a few goals as well. Of course we're going to miss Lyle Taylor, that's just natural, but I don't think we're missing as much as we thought we would.
What were your expectations for the season? Because from the outside looking in, where Charlton currently are at the moment in 10th, on 18 points, 11 matches in, it feels like Lee Bowyer maybe is slightly overachieving, or is that a bit disrespectful to the job that Lee Bowyer is doing?
I don't know. Looking at our transfer activity towards the end of the window, I think maybe we're in the right sort of position that we should be. Start of the season, before the transfer activities were going around, yeah, I mean, I was there. I was with what Lee Bowie's saying at the moment. Let's just get the 45 points. But the way we started the season, I think I haven't seen much to worry us that we can't actually make a bid for the playoffs, personally.
Looking ahead then to the weekend's action, Charlton return from the international break with a home game against Derby. They seem to have just gained a little bit of momentum, on a bit of a run at the moment. Is it looking like a more challenging game than maybe we'd have expected a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I think so. Philip Cocu's starting to, you know, get his ideas into place with the team formation and the way they're playing. You know, and it's a boring to say it, but there ain't an easy game in this championship. There really isn't. I mean, you've seen over the last few weeks, you know, teams near the bottom have won games against teams near the top. You know, we went to Fulham, who've previously been done really well, and, you know, arguably could have won the game. So I think it will be a tough game Saturday.
You mentioned that game against Fulham, which was just before the international break at Craven Cottage, a 2-2 draw in which Charlton did go ahead twice in the game. Well, now we can look back at it a couple of weeks later. Is it a case of coming away from Craven Cottage, even with just a point, is actually a really good result and Charlton can build on the performance? Or is there still that nagging feeling that actually that should have been a game that Charlton got 3 points in a tough away game?
No, I think we've got to be happy with a point there, Kieran. I mean, you know, our keeper was given man of the match for a reason. You know, second half Fulham really put us to the sword. You know, arguably, maybe we could have gone 3-1 up at one point. But, you know, when you're going to go to places like Fulham, I think you've got to be happy with a point.
And just finally then, Martin, looking ahead beyond the Derby game, three really tough games. Obviously, we've got another international break coming up in November. But the three after Derby, Bristol City away, and Bristol City are currently sixth, West Brom away, who are currently top, and Preston at home against third. We're going to learn a lot about Charlton and Lee Bowyer in these next 3 or 4 weeks, aren't we?
Without a doubt, yeah. I think this is, you know, this will be the crux of our season. We'll see where we're going to be after them three games, I think. If we can manage to gate, I mean, the Swansea-Fulham games before and Leeds, we said we would have been happy with 5 points. We've got four. I think if we can take six, maybe five from them to three games as well, you know, we've got to be happy. So anything will be a bonus after that.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Martin. That was Martin Adkins from the SE7 podcast. Remember, you can catch the Charlton Fan Show every Thursday evening here on Love Sport between 9 and 10 o'clock with the SE7 podcast. That's the Charlton Fan Show every Thursday night here on Love Sport between 9 and 10 o'clock. So make sure, Charlton fans out there, that you tune in to that. If you want to share your views, Charlton fans, on this difficult run of games coming up, the likes of West Brom, Bristol City, Preston to come in the next 3 weeks for your side, get in contact with us. Call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking a little bit about Swansea, so make sure you don't go anywhere.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We want to hear your views this afternoon here on Love Sport. As I mentioned just a little short time ago, we're going to talk all things Swansea now. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. If we look at things in general before we talk about specifics, fourth place for Swansea after 11 games, 21 points, just 1 point off the top. Considering there was a change in management, Brighton obviously wanted to appoint Graham Potter, which meant Steve Cooper came in from the England setup, the age group setup. Could Swansea fans have really hoped for a better start, or is there that feeling that actually it could have been even better by this point?
I think you're probably right on both counts, to be honest. I think Steve Cooper came in with a decent reputation, but I don't think I think there was still a bit of plenty of unease amongst Swansea City fans about how the start of the season would go. As I said before, you know, when I've been on your show, Kieran, I mean, he's not changed an awful lot in terms of the philosophy and in terms of the overall approach. But as you say, yes, it could have been better. I mean, the last two home games, particularly, I mean, the game against Stoke was probably the poorest performance of his tenure. And there have been times where they've sort of failed to close down games. The Stoke City game, as I mentioned, and of course the game against Reading. So there's definitely room for improvement. But I think on the whole, Swans fans have got to be pleased. 1 point up the top, in the mix for promotion. And I don't think too many fans would have predicted that at the beginning of the season.
Focusing on that game just before the international break, that 2-1 loss at home against Stoke. Obviously, Andre Ayew scored in the first minute of that game. Do you think that the reason why Swansea ended up losing that game was that complacency completely came into their game? They thought 1-0 up, 1 minute in, at home, kind of right near the top against right near the bottom, that Swansea took their foot off the pedal and just thought the game was won from there? And will Steve Cooper, if that is right, will he be worried about that element of complacency coming in at some point again in the season?
Possibly. I mean, I've asked Steve about that very question before, and he's pretty confident that he can drill it into the players that they're not going to be complacent and they're not going to take anything for granted. He's certainly not doing that. In terms of what happened against Stoke, I mean, I think it was a variety of reasons, really. I mean, I think number one point, yes, as you mentioned, Andre Ayew and the likes of Bora Bastan and that team, but it's still on the whole quite a young squad, and I still think there's a little bit of naivety there in terms of, you know, seeing games out in the Championship. You need to be a bit more streetwise, a bit more mature. It was kind of their problem under Graham Potter as well, particularly away from home. Strangely enough, it's kind of reversed this season. It seems to be at home where a lot of their issues have come to the surface. I don't know if that's perhaps, you know, there is perhaps a certain level of pressure that comes with being at the top. And that sort of pressure really, a lot of these players haven't really had all that much experience of. Because like I said earlier, you know, I think a lot of the players even perhaps didn't know that they would be ending up at this end of the table.
You mentioned a couple of names there. Borja Bastan, who scored 6 goals. Andre Ayew, who's got 4 goals, 3 assists. These are two players that maybe the Swansea hierarchy didn't think would necessarily be at the club this season. Why is it that, to begin with, in particular Borja Bastan, just didn't hit the ground running, was awful really to begin with at Swansea? Why is it that things went not so great to begin with, more so with Bastan than Ayew? Then they went away and then they've come back, seemingly a renaissance in their Swansea careers.
I think in the case of Bora, I mean, as you say, he looked very much like he was going to be on his way out in the summer. But I think, you know, when he came back, I don't think there was an awful lot of pressure, because I mean, when he came into the club, he was a record signing. Swansea still in the Premier League, and you know, those two factors alone, in the eyes of many fans, mean that you've got to hit the ground running if you're going to be a success. But I think this time around, he almost had that sort of freedom, I think, to sort of just come out and express himself a little bit more and not have to worry too much about perceptions and pressure from elsewhere. In terms of Andre Ayew, I mean, it's difficult really, because I mean, in the Premier League, he showed flashes of what he can do. And I think, you know, because of the wage bill, he was obviously another one that Swansea were looking to move on in the summer, but perhaps it's for similar reasons. You know, if you take the if you take the shackles off a little bit, players like this can very often surprise you.
I wanted to get your views, Tom, on Sam Surridge, who's currently on loan at Swansea from Bournemouth at the moment. He scored 4 goals in all competitions, 1 in the league, 3 in the League Cup. He's also received his first call-up to the England under-21 squad. He made a goal-scoring debut against Slovenia. What have you made of him on loan this season? And is there kind of that feeling that, because he's on loan, if he has a good season and Swansea fans really get behind him, he'll probably just find himself back at Bournemouth if he impresses too much?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to speculate really on whether Swansea can line up any permanent deals in the summer. I think it's a little bit too early to talk about that, because we just don't know what the financial situation is. The issue of the ownership has cropped up again. So, you know, I mean, that's a separate story. In terms of Sturridge, though, I mean, yeah, I think he's a raw talent. There's still plenty of room for improvement. I think some of his finishing and his movement inside the box probably needs a bit of work. But you know, Steve Cooper's clearly seen something that he quite likes, and he has, as you say, shown flashes of what he can do. I do remember that game against Reading where he missed a gilt-edge opportunity at the end to wrap it up. So, you know, like I said, in terms of a finishing perspective, he's perhaps not the finished article, I should say. But, yeah, he's a bright young prospect. I'm sure he'll be, you know, sort of working hard to get ahead of Bora, who for me is still the first choice up front. But I think, you know, the more Surridge keeps impressing for club and country, the more it gives Cooper something to think about. And, of course, you know, pushes the likes of Bora to do better to keep their place. So, you know, if Surridge does keep up his progress, it's going to be good news for everyone. And that's Bournemouth included, really.
Next up for Swansea on Saturday afternoon, it's an away trip to Barnsley, who are languishing second from bottom without a manager. How much would Swansea have learned from their last game against Stoke that this is the type of game that on paper it seems just like one-way traffic, but as their very, very last game proved, you take that type of an approach into this type of a game, you can come unstuck and you can lose?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much they'll be reading into Stoke. I mean, I'm sure Cooper's been telling his team, you know, what he wasn't happy with, but I don't think they'll dwell on it too much. I think Barnsley will be a slightly different test, if I'm honest, purely because, we don't really know what sort of test that they're going to be, actually, in all honesty. I mean, obviously, Stendhal was relieved of his duties just before the start of the international break, I should say. Adam Murray's come in to take temporary charge. It remains to be seen what sort of team he'll set up. I mean, for Murray, it's a massive, massive opportunity. It's probably the biggest gig of his career. No disrespect to other teams he's managed, like Mansfield and Boston. But, he'll be very, very eager to ensure his side hit the ground running. So I'm expecting a Barnsley side hungry to impress. And I think, you know, Swansea are going to have to be at the races if they're going to emerge with something. I wouldn't read too much into the table. Cooper, anyway, doesn't seem to read too much into the table. I mean, before that Stoke City game, he's saying, look, you know, the table doesn't mean an awful lot. I think his exact words were, you know, if you keep looking at it, it's going to smash you in the face. And sure enough, on Saturday, it sort of did, I guess. So, you know, I don't think they'll be paying too much attention with the league position or the goings on behind the scenes. I think Swansea will, you know, they'll treat it as any other game, and you know they'll take Barnsley very, very seriously.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online, giving his views on Swansea. It has been a real renaissance for some of those players that have starred for them this season. Borja Bastón, who was brought in for record money at Swansea. Andre Ayew, who had good times at Swansea and then some rather bad ones, fell out of favour, went away. Both are now back and both impressing. It wasn't that long ago that the Swansea hierarchy thought going into the season neither of them would be at the club, but they've been two of the stars of the show, as Steve Cooper has made a really good start to life as the Swansea manager. Very different being an England age group coach to being a full-time championship manager. But they are fourth on 21 points after 11 games. Their next game is against managerless Barnsley on the weekend. Their game against Stoke last time out will probably serve as a warning to Swansea. Then home games against Brentford and Cardiff, and then Wigan away at the beginning of November. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 2558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Bristol City.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views, call us on 0208 70 2558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number if you want to share your views this afternoon. Obviously, plenty of Championship action to look ahead to over the weekend. It gets underway on Friday night. Cardiff up against Sheffield Wednesday, a 7:45 kickoff. Plenty of games on the Saturday afternoon, looking through them at the moment. Some important games for the likes of Stoke up against Fulham at home as they try to work their way up the table from inside the relegation zone. We're going to be talking about a side now that has been in impressive form at the start of the season, currently sitting sixth place on 20 points, and that is Bristol City. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Paul, who is his Twitter handle at the Exiled Robin on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Paul. It's now 10 matches unbeaten for Bristol City after the 1-0 win against Reading, who have obviously since changed their manager. How good a job is Lee Johnson doing this season to get them on this good, impressive, unbeaten run?
Yeah, hi Kieran, how are you? Very good, very impressive, and you know, a continuation, to be honest, of the work that he's done in the last 3 or 4 years with us. We've moved steadily up the leagues in the last few seasons, and you know, I think everyone was hoping and looking for a playoff push this season. We lost 2 or 3 key players in the summer that brought in a large number, and it was quite exciting. But I think given our current injury list, which is 5 or 6 deep of senior sort of first team players, to be on the run we've been on is, you know, is very impressive, and we can just look forward to some of those players coming back hopefully and giving us a nudge and a push for even further up the table.
As you mentioned, with the injuries, one man that is out for the rest of the season actually is Benneke Fobe. He obviously has an ACL injury at the moment, scored yeah. 3 goals before picking up that injury. How big a loss is he going to be, and are you confident that Bristol City have built a squad that can deal with those types of long-term injuries?
Yes, I think he showed in his half a dozen games, not just the 3 goals, but his style of play, that he was able to just change how we play going forward a bit more dynamic than DCU had been last season. Fobe was very good. You could already see it getting on the last man and turning him and getting him behind, and that allowed our midfielders to obviously think differently and play different balls through than they maybe had been used to with DCU and Wyman sort of playing up top. So that's certainly an impact. And in terms of the squad, it's probably the one area that we're now weakest in, actually, because we let Matty Taylor go to Oxford, who was a useful sort of super sub for us and coming on and making an impact. And, you know, we are effectively a little bit weaker up there, unfortunately, now, although despite that saying, now we're one of the top scorers in the league and have created plenty of chances. So it's a real shame. I think it's a real blow to our hopes of really pushing on, but yeah, we've got to just make sure the rest of the squad pulls together. And as I speak to you, we're on the verge of actually making a potential signing as well, a free agent Spanish striker called Rodri, who's here for Wednesday. And there's every expectation he's going to sign on until the end of the season and boost the ranks up there.
One man who has contributed a number of goals so far this season is Famara Diedu, who actually scored for Senegal during the international break yeah. against Brazil. How good a player is he, and how integral is he going to be to the Robins this season?
Well, I think, as I said, crucial. I think, you know, he scored, I can't remember exactly, 13, 14 goals last season. I think that's probably his limit, if we're honest, depending on the style of play. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a 25-goal-a-season man. But, I mean, Fam has a section of fans who don't rate him, who don't appreciate him. I think it's probably, you know, 80-20, but in favour. But he does have a section. He can appear at times a little lacklustre, but to others, I think, you know, you see the effort he puts in, the attempts he makes. He's just, say, possibly lacking that slight clinical edge or the ability to terrorise the defence that maybe someone like Fobe would have had. But, yeah, we've got him now. We've got to rely on him, and he's going to be our focal point, you think, for most of the rest of the season again.
One former Bristol City player that was playing for the England Under-21s last night that I rate really, really highly is Lloyd Kelly. He made the move over the summer to Bournemouth. What was your feeling towards that? Because he is quite clearly a very good young player, was linked with a number of Premier League clubs. Was it inevitable that he was going to go? And do you think that Bristol City got the right type of money for him?
Yeah, I think yes and yes. I think we'd have all liked to have held on to him for another season or two to see what he could do for us. He hadn't fully broken into the team, if I'm honest. He spent a lot of the second half of last season sitting on the subs bench. And at the time, we still had Adam Webster, who, of course, has gone to Brighton. So we were looking pretty rock solid at the centre of defence. So I think when that sort of money came in for a young player who wasn't even necessarily going to be first choice for us this season, I don't think there were too many who felt we shouldn't have made the move. It's a great move for Lloyd. He's a local lad. He's a lovely lad by all accounts as well. He's had a toughish upbringing in the local area. But seems a really nice guy, and you know, absolutely delighted to see him representing England and hopefully in the near future Bournemouth as well. And I think he's certainly got potential and the football ability and the technical ability to go on and play for Bournemouth in England.
One man that signed on a free transfer was Ashley Williams. What do you think that he has brought to Bristol City? As you mentioned, especially as Robins lost Adam Webster and Lloyd Kelly over the summer, what do you think he has brought to the side?
Yeah, well, again, Williams, a bit like this Rodri who we might be signing, is a bit of an emergency signing, really. I don't think we had any plans to, but an injury to Thomas Calas, who was our record signing in the first few games. Nathan Baker, who we've got at back, is injury prone, as is Bailey Wright. We were left a little bit short, to be honest. So Williams was clearly the fittest and the best available of the free agents. He's got a lot of quality. And I'll be honest, he's been absolutely rock solid so far. He's made a real difference in the back line. I think when he first came in, he was maybe looking at being a cover or a third centre back when we needed it. But he's gone a long way, I'd say, probably to establishing himself as the first choice potentially to play alongside Callas when he's back fit. And he's shown a lot of leadership and a lot of courage, and certainly helped out young Taylor Moore, who's experienced in his first championship season, and his experience has helped greatly.
I don't know whether you are a rugby fan, Paul, but there seems to be a real emergence or a real support behind the teams in Bristol, because obviously Bristol City are doing reasonably well near the top of the Championship. I know that the Bristol Bears have sold just over 26,000 tickets for their opening Gallagher Premiership game against Bath on Friday night at Ashton Gate. Do you think there's a real mix in terms of people going to watch both football and rugby? And do you think it's helping both sports with the support that both teams are getting?
Yeah, I think without a shadow of a doubt, this is the long-term vision that Stephen Lansdowne had. He went out to Barcelona about a decade ago and was, I think, scoffed at slightly when he came back and said he wanted to replicate that sort of model in Bristol. And I don't think he was thinking about necessarily winning the Champions League, but the model is a multi-sport arena. We've got the basketball team as well. Plans are to build a new basketball arena on site and have all that in with hotels and a restaurant, piazza and everything. So lots of very ambitious plans. And yeah, I think without a shadow of a doubt, there's a lot of Bristol City fans who are now going to rugby who had either only very occasionally been or never been before. And vice versa, we do see rugby fans turning up at the gate, people who don't necessarily know a huge amount about football, but enjoying seeing a team challenging at top of the Championship and enjoying a bit of variation to their weekends. And there'll always be a few cynics, I think, who didn't really like the idea of the rugby team coming in, but I think most fans genuinely appreciate the work that Bristol Sport as a whole is doing, and the work they've done on the stadium is fantastic, and it's attracting, record average attendances in both clubs.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Paul. That was Paul. At the Exiled Robin is where you can find him on Twitter and Facebook. Obviously, talking all things Bristol City, who are 10 matches unbeaten now. They are going to have to deal with the absence of Benik Afobe, who's out for the rest of the season with an ACL injury, and also the fact that they lost both Adam Webster and Lloyd Kelly over the summer. So it shows how good a job Lee Johnson is doing there. I was going to ask Paul a little bit about whether he feels that Lee Johnson is good enough to manage in the Premier League. He's been doing a very good job at Bristol City the last couple of years. Can he make that step up into the Premier League is always the big question. Love Sport.